Thanks for joining us for the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. Mass MEP believes that there are some elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or even unlocking their growth, that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations. So every episode, take a journey with us as we speak with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts. Whether we're in Boston, Worcester, or out in Springfield, maybe even in the Berkshires, we'll be here every week and we'll explain to you more about manufacturing and what's happening right in your own backyard.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm Haley Steele.
And I'm Emma Mailman.
And we want to welcome everyone back. We are back with our favorite cybersecurity whisperers. It's like our quarterly podcast we do with them. And before we get started, and you guys know who they are, but I'll introduce them to you again anyway. I have to say, we have come a long way. We had Pete, who at one point was like, no, I'm not doing a podcast, to now sending me content saying, hey, this is what we need to talk about in the podcast. So it is like, I'm impressed. So you might hear a little bit as to why we're saying this, and Pete can probably elaborate on it, but they have some newbies at Synergex, and we need to break them in a little bit by the sounds of it. So, yeah. So welcome back, John and Pete from Synergex. Say hello, guys.
Hey, hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Pete.
and we're the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, I told him I was going to poke fun a little bit. It's come a long way. And now I'd love to know that you have somebody new that is a little afraid, and that it brings complete joy to my heart that we need to get them on at some point so they can talk a little bit about stuff.
Yeah. I'm sorry that Evan could not join us today. He had a sporadic customer issue that he had to jump on, you know, about 15 minutes before the podcast. So, you know, these things happen, you know, hopefully we'll get him to join in the next one.
I love it. No stage fright at all.
Yeah. And Pete, that was an awfully, I was impressed as well with your agenda. That was awfully assertive of you, and you have come a long way. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it has loosened me up, but having agenda helps make roll along, keep it moving. Some topics.
I like it though. It's great because, you know, obviously I'm no expert in this, and that's why we come to you guys for it. So when you have these talking points that are big and you see, you're hearing it and knowing what's going on, it makes Emma and I's job a little bit easier on the side of the mic. So we appreciate it. Before we get started into talking about the talking points that Pete has brought up and said, hey, these are kind of the highlights we should talk about. I am going to ask the infamous, now it is known as the infamous icebreaker question. I'm digging deep some days, and some days I don't know why. I just look at something, I go, oh, I'm going to ask a question about that. So this is, it's kind of, I guess it would be maybe a breakfast kind of a question, could be a day, could be a late night question if you're, you know, somebody that's on the younger end of things and can still go out and stay up late at night. Eggs, how do you like your eggs?
Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, she had me nervous though. I'm like, well, you've ruled us out. I think we've reached that age where we're not the late night party goers. But honestly, this is an odd question. Like, how do you answer? I'm a poached egg fan and try to go places and find a consistent place that's going to serve poached eggs and do it well.
You, Pete? I'm in like complete awe right now. All right, John, we won't exclude you. Obviously, you have your way as well. It may not be as good as poached, but that's okay.
I know. I don't even want to answer anymore. No, I don't discriminate. I like all eggs, guys. I don't know why we have to pick just one. I will kind of turn the question a little bit and answer something else, like what is my favorite thing for breakfast?
Yeah.
So like lately, like Southern, like sausage gravy with biscuits with an over easy egg on top. That is my jam, Haley. And I'm passionate about it. It's so good.
Wow. That's fantastic. But you still got the eggs in there. So it works. Yeah. Works great. Yeah. But it's got to be over easy.
Even better with a poached egg on that.
I couldn't beat Pete. So I just tried to over dramatize the whole thing.
We got to keep a balance around here. We just have to. Like sometimes Pete's got the right answer. Sometimes it's you. It just depends. So we are here. Yes, there's serious stuff that we want to talk about. Obviously, there's a couple things going on in the world right now. Pete brought to us and said, hey, let's talk about these things. Obviously, the conflict in Ukraine, it is something that it is affecting us, and we will dig into it from their perspective. There's some rising pressure from insurance companies like cyber policy premiums. This is pretty interesting. I'm intrigued to learn a little bit more about this. And then one area I know absolutely nothing about is EDR versus MDR, which Pete, you can go over all of that. Endpoint detection and response versus managed detection and response. So where would you like to kind of go with this? I'll let you steer this boat, Pete, since you were the one that brought the topics to us.
I thank you. I think the order is perfect the way it is, because I think what's going on in the Ukraine right now and what we're seeing come out of that war is going to speak to why many of the others, even from an insurance perspective in the U.S., that might not have been why they started to go up, but cybersecurity in general is what's driving that. And this conflict is increasing that need. Same with the EDR versus MDR. So we can talk after kind of what's going on and what some of the threats are to some of the tools that we're using and seeing more prevalent now over, I'd say, the last year or two. Those types of tools are picking up in popularity, and we can explain why and how they're useful. But back to the Ukraine, with what's going on there, I think if you look at the headlines right now, I've watched numerous, I've been staying on top of it since the events in the Ukraine started coming out, and not just from a cyber perspective, but it was of interest, like how could we have the superpower kind of coming down on its neighbor? So there's that side. Obviously, we can go down that road, but we're talking more cybersecurity today. So with my interest in the Ukraine and my experience with cybersecurity and IT, we all thought that it was going to be a great big attack from a cyber perspective. I think whether you knew anything about it or not, well, Russia's a superpower. Over the last few years, or I think even 2015-ish, we started seeing them really flex that power of not just of the hackers that aren't kind of supported by the government in Russia, but also those that are being driven by the government and their kind of cyber warfare. I would almost say unit, that they have skills at that level that they were going to utilize to attack. So we assumed that they were going to come out of the gate strong on that area. What we're seeing is that's not the case. So there's lots of kind of back and forth in the industry of why that might be the case. I thought I could just start with kind of a timeline of events on how they went down. Because early, just before the war broke out, we were just seeing in January and February that Russia was kind of pushing the cyber attack, but with small little events. They were doing a lot of what we call wiper malware, so that it was these attacks on the government agencies in the Ukraine, as well as banking, to just kind of cause some disturbance, like slow them down. So the wiper attacks is just wiping out computer systems as they get infected and hit them. And not as many of the ransomware attacks that we thought we might start to see. They're there, but not as prevalent as early on with the wiper attacks. those phases moved on once the war broke out into what you might have heard a lot of, the DDoS or distributed denial of service attacks. So that's just trying to increase traffic to certain areas to bring down their ability to communicate. Along with that, BGP and DNS hijacking. So you might have heard those as keywords in all of this. So BGP kind of, and we can elaborate on all this, but that's like your, I like to think almost your Google Maps of the internet. So it's telling how are you going to communicate across the internet. And when you initiate that connection, it's figure that all out for the best bandwidth, best communication across the internet.
I don't think anybody wants us to elaborate on BGP.
I know John can go into great depths on BGP, loves it. And then DNS, I mentioned DNS is, so you have your like Google Maps of the internet and DNS more of the address book. So telling it, the internet's all made up, all your computer systems communicate with utilizing these IP addresses. So that IP address correlates somehow to a machine name out there, and the DNS is doing that translation. This, what's the machine name? And then using the BGP to communicate out over the internet. So those attacks, they thought, okay, they're gonna bring down the internet. They're gonna bring down all communication incoming and outgoing to the Ukraine. That's gonna hurt the most. We didn't see that happen either. Small, but I was just listening to a Cisco webinar a week or so ago, and their analytics of it didn't really show a big impact on the pipeline, the backbone of the internet going in and out of both Russia and the Ukraine. So why? What could be the interest there? Maybe they're both relying so heavily on the internet for communications to the front lines that they need that means of communication. So they're not going to affect take that down and risk not having those communications.
I thought it was interesting how publicized some of the back and forth was with the politicians, you know, in regard to what they, I guess just threatening, right? Threatening to exercise cybersecurity, military forces. I don't know that I've ever really heard, you know, that in this sort of a conflict before.
Yeah, and that brings up the just the politicians threatening, but then all of a sudden we had all these other groups. You had Conti, it was one of the hacking groups on the Russian side, and then Anonymous that stepped up and were like, well, if they're going to attack the Ukraine, then we're going to put our efforts into protecting the Ukraine, which is incredible. You wouldn't have thought that you'd have hacker groups that were directly supporting sides of a war like that. These groups are trying to encourage other individuals to take part too. So download these tools, and if you download these tools, you yourself can be part of the cyber warfare and help. I would warn against those things right now. But there are going to be the people that do want to. I think probably your money contributing to something, if you research it, is going to take more benefit than becoming a cyber criminal and hacking these systems in support of it. And there's the risk, like, obviously don't use your work computer as you're sitting at the office and download these tools.
It's concerning to me that you've even thought about these options, Chief.
Only at work, John.
Yeah, I would only do it there, but.
He is a fantastic Chief Information Security Officer. I love you, Pete.
Thank you. But I have seen that there's the stuff kind of falling out from people doing that. They've already, from what I'm reading, they're already putting out viruses within these tools. Like, there are the legitimate tools that we could all download and help perform a DDoS attack on a certain area. But then there's viruses in though what appears to be that tool, and you've just downloaded it and either wiped your computer out, infected your system or your business network, and potentially ransomware that's spreading around with the same kind of tool sets. And I've seen even beyond that, the question is, well, is this internationally, are we seeing an increase? I don't know, we haven't seen or heard a lot in the news, but speaking of my, from myself and my own experience, I've seen the phishing on both my personal and email accounts or business email accounts going up in the last month.
Yes. Yeah.
Things that I haven't seen in a very long time.
Yep. We've had some issues as well. And we know that, and we've seen that. So same thing. It's definitely seems to be an increase. And then you have to say, is this an opportunity moment where people are seeing that and they're feeding off of it? So that's why all of a sudden we're having more of these come in. Or is this something that, you know, those people that as much as they say they want to do good, they still sometimes just can't help themselves.
Right. And that's how these troops got started. That was the purpose of what they were going out to do, is ransomware and attacks to bring down organizations that they thought weren't serving their cause.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's hope that, you know, things over there don't escalate to the point where, you know, there's a lot of U.S. engagement. You know, God bless them. You know, obviously, you know, everybody's got their opinions about what's happening and our contribution to that conflict. But, you know, if it does, you know, this is and could be very, very real situation to be thinking about. I know we work with a lot of defense contractors, and we've talked a lot about CMMC compliance and all the things that we should be doing. You know, hopefully, you know, there's folks listening out there and taking that stuff seriously, because, you know, some of these things that Peter are talking about, right, BGP and DDoS, and a lot of this stuff is in practice, right? And if not properly secured, can be a real disruptor to the U.S. If targeted. And I'm glad that's not happening right now, but pretty important to take that seriously, because as geeks, you know, Pete's right. I could talk to you about BGP. We can kind of see how easy it can be, you know, to disrupt. And we're amateurs when it comes to hacking, right? We're good at defense. There are a lot of people out there that are very smart and can cause a lot of disruption. So pretty important, you know, and even another great example of, you know, why we should be paying more attention to that stuff.
And that's a great point from the kind of the defense side, the DoD and the many of these manufacturers that we're working with. If you haven't started that process towards CMMC compliance, now is a great time. For whatever reason, we don't know why Putin has kind of not taken this really aggressively. But from the start, we saw the DoD send even emails out to its client base to say, hey, you need to take this seriously. You need to start looking at these things. So we do have this kind of brief pause, like, okay, maybe he's planning for that most opportunistic time, or either way, we have this free chunk of time. Like, it hasn't across the board and world gone crazy from a cyber attack perspective. So take a look at what your systems are, look at what your possibilities are to implement, even if it's just moving the needle a little bit on some of the low-hanging fruit on tools that you could implement.
Yeah, we had a conversation today, and I'm not going to directly quote the individual that we spoke with, but it was from a pretty large organization, and they have a very big supply chain, and they, you know, the comment basically was, if you're not using this technology and advancing with this technology, you're going to get left behind. So you saying these things now, the both of you, in my head, my question then becomes, does somebody that's at such a high level, as big as this company is, they're super prepared, and I mean, obviously we can't say what he's thinking, because nobody knows what this guy is thinking. Obviously we've seen that, in the past couple of months, but you know, I my mind instantly goes to, well, he knows what the big guys are doing, so he's not going to start there. He's going to start small and make his way, because we talk about the little guys and not being prepared and having this. And then, you know, they start to worry. I think sometimes it's easy to put it out of focus because it's so far away. And, you know, ignorance is bliss. I do that myself, and you know, it's on the TV all the time, and I get to a point where I'm like, okay, I can't watch any more of this. Like, I don't want to hear it or see it. And for me, it's just easier just to go on with my day and not have to deal with it. But on this perspective, when I, you know, put on my work clothes and I'm at work and I have my work face on, I have to really be cognizant of what's happening because of the small manufacturers. And then them saying, do we really need to be concerned about this? Is this something we should be? But we've been saying this all along, you know, for these reasons, you never know what tomorrow can bring. You know, we just got done going through a pandemic and people figuring out, oh, what am I going to do now, and pivoting and adjusting. And now this is happening. So it's still really important. No matter what you do, you really should consider having all elements of this. If you're not at that level where maybe you don't need to be CMMC, but even just the whole cybersecurity part of it, you know, it could be that small.
It's so amazing how easy it is to disrupt, you know, a supply chain as well. And just think about all that we've been through, just trying to buy stuff for our businesses and our houses. And, you know, we're technology resellers and businesses run on computers. You know, there's a period of time where you could just not buy a laptop. You know, the microchip shortage, it just crushed the whole supply chain. And if you think about that from a defense perspective, you know, if you're making small parts for something that is very important to national defense and they get you, think about what that means, right, to the country. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It could topple. I think we just don't. It's hard to make that transition of that thought of, you know, the day to day. And we used to just make things in a factory and, you know, you had your end product and then you put it in a truck and you drove it down the road. So much of our lives every day are, you know, you had those people in Russia, those TikTok stars that were, they were devastated. Their lives were coming to an end because TikTok was being shut off in Russia. Like, that's how dependent we've become to it. Like, you have to, right? You have to evolve as the years evolve. And so, you know, but in doing that, you always have to keep a wide eye and know what's happening and what could, you know, the what ifs. Everybody says, oh my, you could what if this to death. Yeah, but maybe you should, you know, just to be, you know, put in some precautions. So yeah. It's been a wild ride. So I can't imagine that, like you said, Pete, it probably isn't something that we just need to brace for it. You know, we can't just let it go and be like me and be at ignorance is bliss and kind of be like, oh, maybe not. Right.
Yeah. And in many ways, the Ukraine could be in the position they're in now, defending the cyber crime initiatives by Russia kind of showed their hand 4 or 5 years ago by attacking them from a cyber perspective. And they really, Ukraine focused at hardening their cybersecurity platform. Like, how are we going to defend from this type of situation? So they spent some time on it. So hopefully what they have done is defending them at that level. And it's that maybe Russia is trying to hit them that hard, but they're unable to because of the defenses they put in place.
Yep. And maybe now they're insurable, right? That on the other, on the other topic, you know, that Pete had mentioned, you know, it's kind of the other side of what we see a lot of. We thought it might be important to talk a little bit about that. You know, we don't only work with, you know, defense subcontractors. We work a lot in the commercial space. And, you know, so talking about cybersecurity in that field is a little different, right? We obviously have, you know, some risk and some concern about that stuff, but we're also not subject to CMMC guidelines, right? We don't have the FFIEC breathing down our necks worried about this stuff. But what we've seen a lot of is insurance companies, kind of putting pressure on the commercial space because of the amount of cyber claim dollars that they're having to pay out for folks that maybe are a little lacking in that area. We've had a couple of pretty interesting ones, right, Pete?
And that's right. And we're seeing the requests from the insurance companies to our clients being, it's almost like they took their playbook right from CMMC or excerpts from that or similar types of programs where they're taking it at a very serious level. It's not just, do you have a firewall? Do you have antivirus? It's a very high level approach to securing the network. So we'll get a request from one of our clients that could take days to go through just to answer whether, yes, is this implemented or not? So pretty sophisticated programs the insurance companies are trying to ensure you're implementing.
Yeah, it used to be simple stuff, right? Like complex passwords, screensavers, check, 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 right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like I think what maybe a lot of the approach was to self-assessment to NIST.
Yeah.
If I was out there, right? The rules right. were a little different, but the compliance was about the same. It was just, yeah, we got that. We are seeing a lot of now where folks are saying, no, unless this is demonstrated and in place, we will not insure you against, cyber liability, because of the risk to the insurance company.
Even taking the level, I think with one, the insurance company did their own vulnerability scan of the systems to make sure, well, you said these are in place, let's do a vulnerability scan, see where you might be at risk and if you have patched these areas that you're claiming to have.
Wow. I never, ever, ever thought this would be a conversation. Just one of those things. You think like insurance, but it makes complete sense. It really does with what's happened. Like you said, I can't imagine the amount of money that has been, that they've had to, let's file a claim on that one, And so they've got to protect themselves as well, and they probably are doing, hopefully they're using their own advice and they're doing the same things themselves, and having their own cybersecurity and have it set up. Mm. Not something I ever would have thought of that, when we talk to a manufacturer and saying, hey, you might want to consider this, in looking at your insurance premiums and what you have going on. It's just that, they already have enough to deal with on the day to day. I don't have enough people to work, in my lines. And now you're telling me I got to worry about my insurance. Like, yeah, we want to give you all, but this is great stuff that I'm pretty sure nobody's really considered that yet at this point. They haven't thought that far through it. So I like it. I like where your head was at with this one and that you brought it up. It's good.
BGP and insurance. We come with all the spicy topics.
How about it? The spicy topics. I love it. Hopefully I don't get kicked off of my own channel for the explicit content that I keep bringing.
Oh.
They'll be like, now they're using acronyms. What does that really mean? All right. So you have another, your last topic is EDR versus MDR. There we go with the acronyms again. We're very good at doing this because a lot of the stuff is really long names and we just can't remember it completely. So we just shorten it down to letters. Let's dig into that.
Okay. And so EDR, just to go back to the acronym, Endpoint Detection and Response, MDR, Managed Detection and Response. And this area has been booming over the last couple of years. So I kind of look at it as in its name, endpoint detection and response. It's something you could possibly do at just the endpoint as a home user, find a product that would do this endpoint detection response and then manage detection response. And I'll talk a little bit more about it, but the broader scale, like multiple systems, looking at a whole network and managing and detecting threats in that and how do you respond. But the package that's involved there, there's a lot of tooling involved right within just that MDR product line. But the idea is at a low level, so in both EDR and MDR, is building upon the whole antivirus thought, or antivirus malware. These were threats that when you have a tool like those, an antivirus scanner and malware scanner, that they're known threats. So it's something that's been identified. The EDR and MDR tools are starting to look more being intelligent threat detection. So finding ways to say, okay, how does some of these threats spread across the network? And can we identify and just look, do network and threat detection scanning on the network or on the device itself as packets of information are hitting it? Is that potentially threatening? On the managed detection and response, so on a greater scale, now, okay, maybe we've started to identify some potential threats. How do we act upon that? So we might, one, if it's if we think it's legitimate enough, we could even start by locking down the system. But if it's not at that level, we need to notify and alert someone. So they're building the alerting tools into this set. So gathering logs from all of your devices. So whether it's your firewall, your antivirus tools, each workstation, server, all the hardware on your network, gathering all those logs and analyzing that data to see, is there something threatening within all the communication between these devices? And if we identify that threat or a potential threat, notify an MDR will include a SOC, another one of our great acronyms, but Security Operations Center. So this is someone that's, no, not a tube SOC.
Thank you for clarifying.
Absolutely. So with the SOC, Security Operations Center, it alerts them, and that's a site that's being staffed 24/7. So if something comes in, they have trained cybersecurity experts that, okay, how do we start digging into, is this something that's laterally spreading across a network, meaning that it hit one machine and it's trying to affect others down the line? So they'll immediately start to, either by following the logs or having the ability to remote into a system. And there's different levels of that Security Operations Center ability too. They might just alert your MSP, like Synergex, that, hey, we have this, we need someone on site to take a look, or have tools on site to take a look at it, so that we're not having to operate a center that's monitoring 24/7, but we have someone that's going to call us or page us to dig deeper if it needs to be.
So in short, Pete, it sounds like EDR is kind of new age antivirus that sort of targets ransomware and ransomware events. MDR is kind of an enhancement upon that that includes a bit more infrastructure and humans.
That's right.
Yep. Okay. You know, and why that's important right now, why we need stuff like that, is because in a lot of cases, what we see with ransomware is the damage is caused by what we would consider to be normal technology actions by people, meaning encrypting files, right? So Haley, if you wanted to encrypt a file on your desktop because it had some sensitive information, your computer's probably going to let you do that, right? These EDR and MDR solutions will question that sort of stuff. And in one case, it may be a machine that's questioning it, and another one, it may be machines and humans. You know, but if we see a bunch of computers in a network that encrypt a file, that might be a little bit more suspicious than one person encrypting a file, right? So these sorts of technologies give us a little bit more of an ability to be able to deal with some of that nastiness.
That's amazing to me that, you know, when you guys talk about professionals and knowing what to do, like I think about, what does somebody do if you were just, you know, young and you're getting out there and you're considering a career path? Like where do you go to college, you learn about this, like how do you get to this point where, obviously I'm sure you guys had this, you know, you an interest, right? This is something that interests you at some point or another, or something along these lines. But is this something, because of what's happening today, that is opening up more avenues of growing, you know, this pipeline of people to get into this?
Yeah. I think we see a lot of folks coming out of college more interested in this sort of complex, I will call it software engineering, even, right? There is some, you know, there is some parallel, you know, to what, you know, a prime contractor looking for software engineers might look for, and someone who might fall into our field that's a little more interested in cyber defense. It's a very fine line, but the skill sets are similar. I think what we're seeing a little bit less of is kind of the traditional technology, you know, people who understand what BGP and routing and so, you know, we spend a lot of time doing a lot of cross training and exposing people, you know, to all different sides of technology. So, and what we find is, you know, we, Evan, who was not able to join us today, we need to invest more time into his presentation and social skill. But he came to us, you know, kind of interested in one area and is growing into others. And it's still interesting to them. It's just the shiny object right now is more of this cybersecurity, cyber defense, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
I believe his degree is very specialized in cybersecurity or security, where 30 years ago you went to school for college for a degree in computer science.
Yep.
And you learned mostly programming.
Yeah. I didn't want to age us though, Pete, but you just did. So that's fine. I was going to say in our day, you went for computer science. And then from there you were like, oh, I'm going to make programs and games. I'm going to create games, right?
Yep.
Come a long way from creating, you know, Madden to where we are today when it comes to, I'm going to write code. I'm going to make a game. I'm going to be a, you know, a coder. It's going to be awesome. And then you get in there and you go, that's a lot to remember. I took a couple of classes, but I took a computer science class and I was like, yeah, this is not for me.
It's just zeros and ones, Haley.
I know zeros and ones. You got to remember the code and the pattern. There's a pattern. It's the matrix. And I could have figured out the matrix a long time ago. And instead I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. But now I think about this and I was like, oh, it's very interesting. Very interesting. And you, like you said, you got that fine line that you skirt on, and the knowledge, you know, like you're saying, finding somebody that they may have a specialty in it, but then them wanting to learn more, you know, to be able, like you said, it's the shiny new object and they're excited. And that is, you can't teach that. That's either they have it or they don't. So it's one of those things. I wondered if there's like a special farm that you guys go to, they send you away to, like the FBI and you know, like just cybersecurity people. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I recruit at the farm. Absolutely. Yes.
Hey, you may. I've heard some things about what goes on at the farm, you know. You never know.
There's definitely some folks out there, you know, computers are, they're based in logic. I joke about zeros and ones, but at the end of the day, it's all zeros and ones.
Yeah.
And I think over the past couple of years, what software has been for a lot of us who are into this sort of stuff is it's an avenue to be more creative with logic. And there are a lot of people who are interested in that. And sometimes they just have to find their path to the right place. And, you know, we do a lot of cool things at the office that are a little different than other companies. We could probably have a whole podcast about that.
Yeah.
But we like to foster that creativity and fun.
I love it. Yeah. You don't, that's one thing we talk about this a lot. And we talk about, the limitations and, when it comes to imagination and as you get older and how it becomes so limited. And that we, as adults, we don't see the true value of having an imagination and how it brings along that innovation and that creativity and that open thought. And maybe us as people being a little bit more accepting and responsive to things instead of so defiant in our lines and saying, no, this is what I believe and this is where I stand from. So I like that you guys foster that in your environment. So that's pretty cool. We're getting to that point. We're trying to make that work on our end as well. So that's pretty cool. Thanks, Pete, for pulling all the topics together for me. I didn't have
Absolutely.
To do a lot of work for this one. It was great. I love it. Great topic. So we will be seeing you guys though in May, right? Yeah. Coming in for our Manufacturing Your Future Industry 4.0. John, you're going to be speaking.
You got it. Yeah.
He's working on the presentation.
We're going to have a few elements to the presentation. You know, Pete will have to be involved as well, because he's the smart one in this relationship. We'll have some great content there. I promise we'll keep it light. We'll keep it fun. We're even toying with the idea of bringing a special guest. We'll see.
Oh, this is getting exciting. This sounds like a challenge. I'm going to pose this to the other panelists, just so you know.
Very good. What's
going on. But we actually, I don't know if I can release it yet. But we have our keynote speaker for the event. I'm super, super stoked about it. It is going to be pretty awesome. So it was pretty cool talking to some of these people, like just really intelligent people, just blow my mind. So this guy's probably like, it's really not that big of a deal. Meanwhile, we're like, this is great. You know, we can't wait. So we were bubbling over this morning when we got it finalized. So once we can release it and say it, I just haven't got approval from his people yet. He's got people. So he'd probably be like, they're really not people. It's just our marketing team.
Yeah, right. Like it's my sister-in-law. Yeah.
We just got some people, but yeah, we're excited about it. So it'll be a great day. It'll be a fun morning for everybody to be there for that. So May 20th. And then we're trying to get some things going for us to come out to Western Mass too. So we're hoping to do some events with you guys out there, maybe work the BIC in and get some things going out on that side. We're going to loop Emma into it as well. Maybe do a little bit of the pipeline, the, you know, top line, the bottom line and the pipeline. So we're always big on looking at the Volk schools and the community colleges and seeing if we can tie them into something as well. We just got to wait and see what topics Pete would like to bring for us to do for our next events out in Western Mass. So
I'll get on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks guys. I appreciate it. And thanks everyone else. So thanks for listening to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can always go to our website at massmep.org. So we'll see you next time, whether it's our space, your space, or cyberspace.